The Guardian.
Hi, this is the Guardian Science Weekly podcast. My name's Mark Miodovnik. I'm a material scientist from King's College London, and I'm giving this year's Royal Institution Christmas lectures.
Hello, this is a special Science Weekly. We're live-ish from the Royal Institution in the heart of London.
2 minutes then to rehearsal.
In a way, if a dress rehearsal goes perfectly according to plan, we're always slightly nervous because that usually means something's going to not work on the night.
There's all sorts of stuff moving about. Lots of it is hot, properly hot.
This is the place of the famous Christmas lectures broadcast on TV every year in the UK. Part of a tradition that's been spanning generations.
We've had leaking props, we've had breaking props, we've thankfully never broken a child.
The lectures this year are all about scale. We've got lots of sort of giant objects, so we've had to make a giant thumb.
Now, you'll be able to see the polished version on TV later this month, but today we're going to go behind the scenes of this rehearsal of the second lecture. So let's go and have a look what's going on.
Chaos? No. It's good fun.
This is a magnetic fluid. It's about to wrong, but if you are working around the bench, please be aware belts, watches, anything that you've got on you that is magnetic.
The director, there he is. He's just come in. Yeah, he's the one with the loudest voice.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I have your attention, please? We have to crack on today. It's quite a busy programme. There's lots of stuff in it.
30, 40 people around. It's a huge operation. I mean, all the special effects people, the usual sound, lighting, cameras and everything else. But it's just the planning. It's done as a live performance. And all this equipment, all these demonstrations, all have to be prepped, rehearsed and do it in split-second timing.
The camera crews are just starting to get ready to roll. They've got 1 minute before they start the rehearsals. They've been warned that they're going to carry on whatever happens. Unless literally something breaks or falls on someone's head, they're not going to stop.
How's that? 2, 3, 4, 5. What's that look like on the rack? Bill, how's it look on the rack?
Yeah, it's good, boy.
I think each aspect of it is going to be practiced again and again this morning. Okay, I think that they're just getting ready to start soon.
When you get to that point,
yeah.
Back of this point. Right. Okay, here we go. Stand by. All set. Here we go then. Coming out of the titles in 5, 4, applause, 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 cue.
Hello, 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 hello. Sorry I'm late. Wow, fantastic. Well, welcome everybody. My name's Mark Miodovnik. I'm a material scientist from King's College London. And today we're going to talk about stuff. We're actually going to take a journey into the inner space of stuff.
We alternate every year between biological sciences and physical sciences. This year it was the turn of the physical sciences. And we just scout around for scientists who are at the top of their field, but who can also present ideas in a little bit of a wacky way, but also in an entertaining way and an accessible way to everyone.
Well, Mark's quite unlike any other Christmas lecturer because he doesn't really keep to the script. Pretty amazing, really. He ad-libs. He's like a jazz musician, not like a classical musician. So you never quite know where it's going. So sometimes we have something in the script and he never keeps to it. That's okay, because it means it's very funny, more like a kind of stand-up comedian.
One of the biggest names that's presented the Christmas lectures in the past is Sir David Attenborough. He presented them in the 1970s, but his involvement with the Royal Institution Christmas lectures went back before that. He was actually controller of BBC Two when they were first televised, and he recently told us that he was pretty much responsible for the decision to start televising the lectures. So we have him to thank for this lovely Christmas tradition.
It's an amazing gig, this. I mean, it doesn't get better than this, does it? I mean, it's what a tradition, 185 years of Christmas lecturers, and there are some great people who've done it. It's really intimidating. But I mean, I'm up for it. I'm up for it. It's going to be entertaining and interesting, and hopefully it will all come off. It seems improbable now, but hopefully on the night it'll be fine.
Over here, we've got what's essentially a large Bunsen burner.
We're in the famous Faraday Lecture Theatre. The seats have been taken away, so it looks a little bit different to normal. If you've been here, normally there are big red seats everywhere. Actually, now they're just pads. There's huge TV cameras right in the middle. Faraday's desk has been taken away, and there's this sort of colourful trolley in its place. You'll see all this on telly. And we're still sitting up, about three quarters of the way up, the sort of stadium seats. holding a copy of today's script. It's lecture number 2, Why Chocolate Melts and Jet Engines Don't. And it's much, much thicker than a normal Science Weekly script.
This year we've got 40% more budget to put towards the programme, which is a really great opportunity to make some of the demonstrations and explanations even bigger and even better. We've got a Velcro wall just outside the theatre, we've got a massive iron filings explosion.
We want to make sure we get a really fantastic flame from that sparks at the front. It mustn't be too big so it burns the ceiling, but we want it to be big enough so it really wows everyone. So they've just stopped recording for a little while. I'm assuming something's not gone right, but it was amazing just then. It was a huge, massive Bunsen burner type thing. And Mark was throwing elements into it, creating fireworks. It looks quite terrifying. And I'm imagining when there's about 300 kids in here screaming at the same time, it's probably going to be quite an interesting effect. It'd be interesting to see.
After you've gone through these rehearsals, you think, is it going to work? Is it going to work? And then finally on the night, it does. It very rarely goes wrong.
Okay, I think they're going to start up again soon. I better shut up. A very tall chap with a basketball has just walked in as well. I'm assuming he's a basketball player. He seems of that build. Do you think they always carry basketballs around? Basketball players, just in case there's a hoop to throw it into from a distance. Do a trick. I'm not sure what he's going to be doing later.
Yes! I wish I could do that.
Okay.
I've been trying for so long.
Okay, into the chat.
Okay, hello. So, who are you? Where do you come from? So that's a lot of practice with this ball and that height, isn't
it?
Yeah. Could I just ask you, I mean, I know this is under pressure and television, I think, but would you be able to do a penalty from here?
Is that possible?
You try. That's fantastic.
So, Mark, you stay there, you stay about there, that's good. Okay. Whenever you're ready.
Oh!
You could have at least tried to touch the sides. Fantastic.
That is really impressive. Okay, now, all right, now, look, being a physicist, I want to make it slightly more difficult for you. And I'm not going to make the basket higher. I'm going to actually make it smaller.
Okay.
And I'm going to make the ball smaller.
Uh-oh.
Now, this should be easier, right? But have a go. Oh, that's a bit unfair of me, isn't it? It's a bit unfair of me because, of course, there's this business about getting used to a certain weight, isn't there? I
mean, we'll just leave them to do the recording in the main theatre, but we just crept up behind the theatre itself to meet Olympia Brown, who runs the Royal Institution Christmas Lectures. Now, Olympia, this is the rehearsals, but I'm assuming there's been a huge amount of preparation and practice before we got to this stage. It's not just thrown together, is it?
Unfortunately not, no. We selected Mark back in April, and it's been slowly building since then. Things really kicked off about September when we really started getting the hammers and nails out and banging the props together.
Now, this has been going on for more than 100 years. I mean, Michael Faraday was the first to do these lectures, and people used to queue up outside. I mean, what kind of weight is that on your shoulders and you're organising these things?
It was actually more than 180 years ago that they started, and people are still queuing up outside to watch them. It is a tremendous sense of responsibility to carry on a Christmas tradition for so many people. It's part of their fabric of their Christmas, but it also makes it so exciting to work on because it means so much to so many people, and when you get it right, people absolutely love it, and it really is an amazing feeling.
If you don't believe me, let me show you what they do. Yeah. Your mum's priceless brooch. You shouldn't do that.
Earlier on, we saw some fireworks. It looks a bit dangerous sometimes, and you can probably smell bits of burning. What are the things that have gone wrong in past years?
Anything and everything. We had a leaking prop a couple of years ago. We've had props that look like they're poo rather than the thing that they're actually supposed to be demonstrating.
What were they meant to be?
It was meant to be a volcano machine.
Of course, that would look like poo, wouldn't it?
Too much brown dye in the volcano mixture.
Oh, I see.
It was very unfortunate.
And the chances of me getting a little cut is, I think, significant.
We've got other lecturers outside, it's fine.
Yeah. I just don't want to bleed over everybody.
So we're now standing outside the lecture theatre, waiting in a recording pause, actually, but they're going to inflate a massive wall, a Velcro wall. I think they're a bit concerned because there are two quite priceless chandeliers that are in the path of the inflation. I think the idea is that Mark and a few members of the audience are going to dress up in Velcro suits and throw themselves at it, at the wall. So the big bouncy castle with Velcro attached. How'd you get down from that there? Once you're up there? Turns out the very hardcore looking cables are broken, electrical cables. They're having a bit of trouble. I think there's enough people here that can just probably blow it up, couldn't they? You all just tried hard. So there's an enormous inflatable castle type thing being blown up in the middle of this beautiful sort of reception room here at the RI. It's very close to a chandelier. It looks okay though. The paintings behind the wall look okay as well.
I'm still a little bit nervous. It literally is about 6 inches from the ceiling. There's some priceless scientific heritage equipment right behind it. There's a very expensive scanning electron microscope about a meter away from it that's on loan. We're not out of the woods yet, let's just say that.
It's quite an incredible sight, actually, because it looks like something you'd see in a field, and it's in the middle of this kind of nice drawing room.
Through the door in his Velcro suit. Come on.
Hang on.
Okay, Mark. Okay, out you come. Let's go.
It's not just for kids. Get out of the way. Yeah. For me too.
Yeah. Okay, so lots of business. My turn. Yeah, okay. And then you launch yourself at it.
Yeah, yeah.
When you come off it, little chat to the kids.
Oh, okay. I'm not going to talk. I'm not going to say on upside down.
Oh, you could do. Absolutely. It depends if they've managed to stick themselves on upside down. Should do an upside down thing.
Like
I'm
that.
Just talking this through, assuming it's still going ahead. So you have a lot of fun with it. Now, what's the scientific stuff that you're saying out here?
I'm going to say that.
Seems to be a bit too problematic. It's being put away by a man in a shell suit. I'm not joking about that. He genuinely is wearing a shell suit. I didn't think they existed anymore. I thought they were illegal. The EU had passed laws against the noise they make when you walk around.
Reminder, ladies and gentlemen, lunch today is at 2 o'clock. We have about an hour and 25 minutes to finish this run and sort out a few of the problems.
2010 has been a really big year for science on the BBC. They've had a year-long celebration of science called the World of Wonder. Presenters such as Brian Cox have really brought a sort of geek chic factor to science presenting and science consumption by the public. Science is once again cool, although obviously in my eyes it never really diminished. But I think that the BBC are really happy to have such a great finale to their year of science as the Royal Institution Christmas Lectures.
Anyone know about this chair? Who got the chair in? Anybody?
Well, they're going very well. I mean, it's really great to have them back at the BBC.
If you little record pause and bring on the chair, and get the chair set up, and then distribute the chocolate, and then carry on. That would be the obvious thing to do.
I'm David Dugan, executive producer of the Christmas Lectures. The bit I'm worried about, actually, in this lecture, I'm not too worried about too much. I mean, I suppose the worst thing would be when we're trying to film the chocolate melting in the mouth of the child. I'd hate the child to get, because the end of the endoscope is quite hot, so we've got to be very careful not to. So that's one thing we're sort of slightly nervous about. That's what we're actually just about to rehearse now.
Everyone in the audience is going to be eating a bar of chocolate, having it slowly melt in their mouth. But we're getting one lucky volunteer to come up, lie on the dentist chair with the chocolate in the mouth, and then putting an endoscope camera in their mouth as well, to watch it melting.
And then he talks you through it. He talks you through this whole process of what the experience is in your mouth. And you can't quite believe it, you know, because he's right. All this stuff is going on. You just think of a lump of chocolate going in your mouth and it melts. But no, he keeps his riff going for about a minute. It's very entertaining.
Okay, is everyone ready? Now everyone's got chocolate? Everyone at home has got chocolate, hopefully? You've got chocolate. All right, so if we can all put the chocolate in our mouths now, no chewing. All right, off you go. You put your chocolate in, and this gives in. I'm watching you guys, no chewing. You're chewing, no chewing. Okay. You, no chewing. I can see you at home chewing, none. No. Okay, now let's get in there.
I think we should lower the lights everywhere except on the subject.
Now, what's happening when you put the chocolate straight in your mouth is the first thing is you feel this kind of hard material with corners.
We've got a giant tongue in today's lecture on which we're melting some giant bits of chocolate on a hot plate.
So let's have a look at what happens when you put the chocolate on the tongue. You all experienced it, but let's... Oh, I feel like I'm in a musical.
No tongues.
So I've got a couple of bags of dry ice in front of me, which I needed to keep some samples of chocolate nice and cold for a scanning electron microscope. I've got the remnants from a late night session smelting some zinc last night for a demo where we were looking at the crystal structure. So Bunsen burner over there and a stainless steel crucible next to some beakers of sodium acetate, which went disastrously wrong last night. Hello, welcome to the prep lab in the Royal Institution. My name's Andy Marmory. I'm the Clothworkers Science Demonstration Technician here at the Royal Institution, so I'm very involved with the Christmas lectures and all the demos. We're surrounded by the chaos from this year's Christmas lectures, so it's a bit of a nightmare. You have to watch your step on piles of sawdust and bits of foam shaped like doner kebabs. One of the main things that's been taking up my time this year was we had a demo where we were dropping crash test pets from the roof of the lecture theatre 10 metres up. We were making these out of ballistics gelatin, which is what the police and forensic scientists use to model the behaviour of human flesh when it gets shot and blown up and things like that. So we had to make about 20 of these things, pumping the stuff into balloons and having it spurting all over me and doing like gelatin all over my skin and all over the floor. So there's always one nightmare prop that just turns out to be 20 times more hassle than you think it's going to be, and that was it this year.
One of the things we do in the first lecture is have these crash test pets, and the idea is you drop the crash test hamster and you drop the crash test dog, and for most of the rehearsals, you know, the dog always splatters on the hamster, so it's fine. But just when we're about to do it for the final rehearsal before we do it, the dog just kind of landed and didn't break. We couldn't believe it, you know. So it's just one of those things that's sod's law. It didn't actually work.
So if I do a small force, it doesn't do much. Now I do a bigger force. There we go. Go over the line. This computer thinks, hold on a minute, I'm in a crash.
It's better on you.
So you basically, small knocks, you don't want anything to happen. Big knocks, you want the car to know you're in a crash, and you want it to do something to save you. Now, what could it do to save you? It could deploy an airbag, right?
There are no kids here at the moment. They're going to be here later on in the evening when the actual recording happens. And that's what you're going to see on telly at the end of the month. These lectures are always a huge pleasure to do. It's one thing in rehearsal, but when you get the kids in, suddenly the whole atmosphere becomes totally electric. You can just feel the anticipation. And what you'll notice is that when the kids are all around here in the arena, the lecture always just kind of, there's this kind of horrible tension outside. I mean, it's the worst kind of stage fright when you've got hundreds of kids waiting behind the black, and then they open and the lecture comes on and it's fantastic. I mean, it's just so mad, you know, because you really do get a huge buzz out of it.
Okay, very quick. Yeah, so this is the electron microscope. We've just put that machine, earlier we put another one of those inside the microscope, which is in there. And this is Kelly, she's operating the tilt. This is John, who's operating the machine.
So we're going from the size of things that are sort of millimetres down to things that are a few microns. My name's John Critchell. I'm an electron microscopist. I work at Oxford University. We've brought this scanning electron microscope, and we're looking at some of the small things that Mark is showing in the lecture. So we're looking at Velcro, because most people have some idea of the size of Velcro. and then we're looking at a human louse next to it, because again most people have some idea of what that looks like. And then we're going down to look at some MEMS devices. So these are small machines made out of silicon, man-made, both gyroscopes and accelerometers is what we have here.
A tenth of the size of a Velcro. Oh look, it's got tiny little hairs on it. Hairs on a louse.
Biological things are fun. You know, wood lice are quite fun. You can see how they grip onto things, how they lay their eggs, how they very cleverly cement their eggs onto human hair. That also leads you to see one of the ways to get rid of them, and that is to use lots of hair conditioner, because then the cement doesn't stick and the eggs can't grow. From my own personal history, I've looked at things that have broken. So you look at things that have fractured. Why have they fractured? You know, bits of power station, bits of aircraft, even the Rolls-Royce engine that's giving problems with the big Airbus at the moment. Electron microscopes are used to study that, to find out why it's going wrong.
So this is the MEMS, this is the machine.
Yes.
That we were looking at, it's back there. Wow, so this is human-made machine, and the features on it, it's a gyroscope, a miniature gyroscope.
You don't want the science to overpower it. I mean, these lectures, the way I look at it, they are factual theatre. You know, they are, it's a theatrical performance, and it's just kind of enthused people with science. And almost every lecturer, without exception, has said, I remember as a child watching these lectures. You know, they all have some memory of it, and I think a lot of scientists do. I think it does inspire children to actually go into science.
That's one of the things I'm really proudest of with the Christmas lectures, is that we get completely cutting-edge science to 11-year-old kids, and they understand it. They feel like they can actually have an opinion on it. It's about breaking the ideas down into manageable chunks. It's about only getting over as much information as you actually need to, and kind of leaving out the stuff that isn't quite so important for the overall understanding. Unanswered questions that are still out there for them to investigate. So hopefully it's an inspiring message as well as an entertaining one.
We're here just to excite the interest of young people who we hope will become scientists one day, to look at scientific things, to see how we look at them, how we study them, and just some of the techniques that we're using.
I bet you there's not an adult in the audience that doesn't learn something from these lectures, and that's the great thing, because you may know most of it, but then there's just one thing or a particular way of looking at something. Like, I'm sure everyone's wondered, you know, when you turn up an iPad or a phone and the way, you know, the way it flips from upright to on its side, you know, how does it do that? Everyone's thought that. And then here you've got a kind of absolutely amazing explanation of how the accelerometer works, how it all, you know, you see it both as a kind of physical, classic RI demonstration with a, you know, the heavy-duty model, but then you also go out and see, you know, scanning electron microscope images at really micro scale. So it's kind of got everything.
Very special guests from Strictly Come Dancing dancers to Britain's Strongest Man. Mark's going to be flying out at the end of the lectures. They're not just gimmicks, but they're there to make the scientific point even more impressive and more memorable because of the way it's being delivered.
Off you go, the car's out of control! Ah!
Oh, save. Okay, and Joe, get the head of the crash test dummy. I want to see his expression.
Well, it's pretty tiring now. We've just been through the whole thing for the first time. And even so, now, some of the demos aren't quite ready. I'm Mark Miodovnik, this year's Christmas lecturer, amazingly enough. With only 4 hours to go. Is it 4 hours to go? Or around that, anyway. That seems quite nerve-wracking to me. and there's lots to remember, and just lots to do. So, yeah, it's a bit overwhelming at the moment.
So things that seem like magic, things like being in a crash situation and your car taking action to save your life, is not magic. It's the microstructure.
So it's called Science Matters. I mean, I'm a material scientist, and you know, if you ask people what they think a material scientist is, they probably say you make genes or something, which is not a bad thing to make, but it isn't what I do. So what are materials? I mean, they're everything, so that doesn't really help you, does it? And every science, physics, chemistry, engineering all deal with materials, so they would all say they own that topic. So what makes a material scientist special, in a way, is essentially our view on materials, which is that it's all about scale. Like, if you want to understand how materials are going to work, then you need to know at what scale the physics you need to happen happens. And this is sometimes the atomic scale, and it's sometimes the micro scale, and it's sometimes, you know, a mesoscale. And so we spend a lot of our time looking down microscopes and a lot of our time simulating atoms and looking how the physics of atoms behave. And so that's why size is at the centre of these lectures.
If you think about it, we could make cities and bridges and planes that all were alive and would know when they were hurt and would repair themselves and be able to communicate with us. And that does sound like a weird world to live in, except when you think that when you go into a forest and you live in a forest, everything around you is alive. And that doesn't seem weird at all. So why can't we make a city like a forest? And I think that is going to happen.
The animal kingdom, it really does matter how big you are as to what you can do. You know, so fleas can jump 100 times their own height. We can't do that. But we can live longer than fleas. Why is that? And so the lecture series kind of has its heart in material science, and it opens up to the whole subject of scale and size, which is arguably the most fascinating question of all, which is, are we the right size?
So these are very exciting times for science, and I think you should watch this space if you're interested in artificial life and self-healing materials. Anyway, thank you very much for listening, and good night. Member of the Managing Mark Fisher.
Well, that's it from the Royal Institution today. You can see the final result of all this over Christmas. Check out the details at ri.ac.uk. And of course, you can watch it all on BBC4 at 8 o'clock on the 28th, 29th and 30th of December.
Right. Can you get some chocolate in here? Can you get the endoscope ready to look at a bar of chocolate, please? So
next week, we spend Christmas with the scientists at CERN. This podcast was produced by Andy Duckworth. I'm Alok Char. Thanks for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.